This is the Flip Empire Show with Alex Pardo, episode 188.
Welcome to the Flip Empire Show, bringing you the interviews, strategies, and insights for smart real estate investors. Prepare to dive into the minds of real estate's heavy hitters and gain the cutting-edge expertise you need to scale and grow your real estate empire. Your success and freedom starts now with your host, Alex Pardo.
What's going on, superstars? I got part two for you with Greg Helbeck here in this particular masterclass. And what I'd like to ask you to do is that if you haven't had an opportunity to listen to part one, go to flipempire.com/episode 186. Listen to that first part interview because you're going to have a lot more context and information for this particular episode, 188. In part one, the heart of the podcast episode was a mock role play sales call that Greg and I did where I was a motivated seller. And so, you know, we spent about 10 minutes doing it, a call. It was an inbound lead. And then he broke down the sales process, the framework, the psychology, why he was asking certain questions. And then what we're going to cover on this particular episode is we actually, at the end of that call, we set up an appointment. Okay. So on part two, which is this episode, we are doing a face-to-face role play appointment with the motivated seller. And same thing, you know, this is about 25 to 30 minutes. And then at the end, we break down the exact framework, the process. And I threw him some curveballs and threw him some objections. So there's a lot to take out of just listening to this role play and things that, you know, if you're marketing for leads and you're going on appointments or you have an acquisitions team, this is the type of episode that can really help take you guys to another level with regards to converting appointments, converting leads to appointments, and ultimately appointments into contracts. So without further ado, let's just dive right into it. All right, guys, welcome back here to part two with Greg Helbeck. So guys, before we launch right into what we're going to be covering today, I want to kind of set the stage and give you a little bit of preview just in case you didn't get an opportunity to listen to part one. So part one, Greg and I, not only did he like just tell his story, how he got into this business and then how he really just became really, really good at the sales process and how he went through sales training with John Martinez. But what we did was we did a mock sales call, right? So it was an inbound lead and we spent about 10 minutes. And so not only did we do a mock role play, but then after, it was really valuable to listen to Greg break down the sales process that he took me through as a motivated seller. And so what we're going to do here in part two is take that a step further. At the end of that appointment, at the end of that call, we set up an appointment where, you know, I have a vacant property. I inherited the property. My mother passed away and I own this property with my sister. It's vacant. I don't live in town, but I flew in, let's just assume. And so now I'm going to show this property to Greg and he's going to take us through the sales process, but now at a face-to-face appointment. Okay. And then we'll do the same thing. We'll circle back and then Greg will kind of break down the framework that he took us through at an appointment, because it's a little different than when you're just on the phone. So if you guys, what I want you to do is I think you're going to get a lot more out of this process and this episode or this podcast series if you listen to part one. So if you guys go to flipempire.com/episode 186, /episode 186, listen to that and then circle back here. This is episode 188. So Greg, cool, man. Are you ready to rock and roll here?
I'm ready to go.
Okay, beautiful. So again, I am, we're going to start the episode here with, you knocking on the door. Okay. I'm going to be inside kind of picking up a little bit and I'm going to show you the house, but we'll kind of just, I'm not going to show you like every single quote unquote room, right? Like we'll just do a modified version of me showing you around. But really the heart will be when you and I kind of sit down or we get together around the kitchen there and we start to kind of figure out if this is the right fit for me and if,
sure,
you know, and if you want to buy this property ultimately.
Sure. Yeah. Well, so we'll do a high level like overview on the tour and then we'll get right into the meat, like the conversations and the negotiation
and
stuff.
Exactly. Exactly. And then when you do the breakdown after, you can talk about, okay, you know, at an appointment, you would probably, you know, they're going to walk you through the house and it's going to be a little extended, but for the sake of time and for this podcast, we'll just kind of do a, you know, high level overview of the condition of the house.
Perfect.
Okay. Okay, cool. So, all right. Hey, are you must be Greg.
Hey, how are you, Alex? Nice to meet you in person.
Hey, pleasure to meet you, man. Thanks for coming out here on such short time. I wasn't sure, you know, how quickly this process could happen, but yeah, I mean, this is the house here. You want to come in?
Yeah, I appreciate it. I just want to kind of set some expectations before we start here today. So, like I said on the phone, I mean, this shouldn't take any more than an hour. Just making sure you had the time available to meet today. And what happens on these, you know, we go on a bunch of these a week. So, you know, I was hoping you could just give us a tour of this property. I'm going to want to see all the rooms. I want to take a look at everything, all the mechanicals. After the tour, I was just wondering if we can sit down. I just have a couple questions for you just to kind of see what you really want out of this property. And at the same time, you can ask me any questions you may have about how this works. And hey, at the end of this property, at the end of this meeting, I'll let you know if I can buy the house, exactly what my offer is going to be to the penny. And I'll also let you know, for some reason, if I see something here that's going to prevent me from being able to buy this property, I'll 100% let you know that I can't buy it. So either way, at the end of this meeting, we'll know moving forward whether we can buy the house or not. You'll have that understanding in your head. Is that okay?
Okay. That sounds good. And Greg, you seem like a young guy, man. Are you the buyer? Would you be the buyer for this property? I mean, is this your company?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. I actually get that a lot. You must be asking me that for a reason.
Yeah, no, I'm kind of surprised. I was expecting to meet with someone a little older, but I don't really care either way. I'm just curious because you seem like a really young guy.
Awesome. Yeah. Is that a concern to you? I mean, if you don't think this is going to be a fit, I mean, I can just get back in my car and I don't want to make, okay.
No, you're good. I didn't mean to, hopefully I wasn't trying to offend you. You seem like a young guy.
Okay. Yeah. I am the owner of the company. If you want, I mean, I have, you know, proof of funds and stuff. So if that's going to be a problem, you just let me know and I can show that to you. Or if you want me to just leave, if you're uncomfortable with anything, it's 100% okay. I could just get in my car and go home if you're uncomfortable with my age.
Not a problem. I saw you and awesome. You remind me of my grandson. So, you know.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I appreciate it.
Okay. Awesome.
Yeah. Thanks.
Yeah, I was. You can see here, obviously, that it's a pretty small house. I mean, it's the tenants actually left it in decent shape. This is the first time I've been back in a couple of years. But so, yeah, you have a little room over here, you know, to the right. You know, I remember actually growing up in this particular room. But, you know, it's kind of a small room here. But that's my bed used to be over there. And then right across the hall here, you got the bathroom. And then over here is where my sister, you know, had her room. So you got two bedrooms on this side of the house and a bathroom. And then here, let me take you over here. I won't take you into the master because it's just a room, you know, it's a little bigger, but it's over there. But right here is the kitchen. So this is the kitchen. And then we got just a screen that goes out to the backyard here.
Awesome. And, you know, how long has this thing been empty for?
You know, so yesterday after we hung up, I started making some phone calls and I talked to my sister and my sister told me that the tenants moved out about a month ago. So, you know, she didn't even tell me that. And so I told her I was going to be meeting with you and, you know, she wasn't sure if that was a great idea, to be honest with you. She, you know, it's the house kind of has sentimental value to us, to her more than me. And so she was thinking maybe we should think about, you know, putting some money into the property and keeping it. But honestly, I would probably rather sell it if we can get the right price for it.
Okay. The right price. I mean, I'll be honest with you. We buy a lot of houses around here and I mean, and maybe listing it with an agent is your best bet. I mean, I'm surprised you haven't done that already.
No. Yeah. I'm not interested in, you know, it's just, I've heard like horror stories about, you know, listing properties with agents and even though the property's vacant, I don't want to have to come, I don't live here and I just don't know. I certainly don't want to leave a key with someone I don't know and trust. And so, yeah, if we could sell it like to an investor who's going to pay cash and it's going to be like quick, you know, if I can get my sister on board, then I'd much rather do that. But I don't think listing it with an agent is something I want to do.
Sure. I get it. So, I mean, you know, at the end of the day, I mean, have you thought about renting this property out? I mean, this is a great rental market here. I mean, I actually have five rental properties myself down the street.
I mean, maybe. My sister and I talked about it. It just depends. I'm not really sure, you know, how much money it's going to take to get it up to, you know, it, they left it in pretty decent shape, but we're still going to have to put a little bit of money into it. My sister would probably prefer to do that. I would, you know, this house has been in our family for years. We don't have much use for it. So I'd rather just sell it if we can get the right price, but you know, we've considered keeping it. I'm just not really sure.
Sure. So it seems to me like you guys are definitely not in a rush to sell this thing. And if we couldn't buy it, it really wouldn't even make a difference for you.
No, I mean, we're not in a rush. Well, I'm curious, you know, but no, I wouldn't say it's owned free and clear. So, my sister deals with like the guy that takes care of the lawn. And so, it's not like we're not in a hurry to sell it. We're not going to give it away.
Sure. Yeah. And that's why I said, I mean, if I can't buy this house, I'll just let you know it's probably not for us. And I want to make sure that if we do make an offer for you, it's going to be able to, you know, solve any problems you may have. And I'm not sure if I really even see anything here. So if you're not in a rush to sell this thing, I think maybe keeping this property is your best bet or listing it. I mean, let me ask you a question. I mean, if you sold the house, I mean, what in the world would you even do with the money?
I'd probably do some traveling. I mean, I'd have to split it with my sister, but I enjoy to travel. You know, my wife and I enjoy traveling. You know, we're retired, and so we'd probably do a little bit of traveling. You know, maybe finish paying off our house.
Sure.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Just curious why do you
if
ask?
You didn't sell the house, you can still travel. I just asked that because I mean, from what you're telling me, I really think that. From what you've said, I think if you just kept this property and fixed it up and rented it or even listed it with an agent, it's probably going to make more sense for you because, you know, if we bought this thing for cash, I mean, with us, you're getting you'd be getting a cash offer, but, you know, we're not able to offer full market value for the property. And it seems to me like this property is going to be about squeezing every single penny out of it.
Yeah, I mean, look, I'd like to sell it. You know, my sister kind of has different plans, but I think if I can, you know, show her a good offer, then it might make sense to sell it. And yeah, I'd like to do some traveling with my wife. And, you know, this was something that wasn't even in our mind until I told you on the phone yesterday, I started getting a bunch of these cards in the mail. Yeah, that's kind of where we're at now.
Sure. Okay. Well, listen, I'll tell you this. I mean, we can make an offer on this property. If the offer is going to work for you, I mean, that's fine. We can talk about how we can, you know, take this to the finish line, if that makes sense. Hey, if the offer doesn't work, are you just okay with giving us a no today? And I promise if you give us a no, it's not going to hurt my feelings.
Yeah, no. Again, I certainly don't want to give it away. And for me to get my sister on the same page with, you know, for us to be on the same page, it's going to have to be a, you know, just an offer that makes sense. So yeah, no, if I hear an offer that doesn't make sense, you know, believe me, I'm a straight shooter. I'll tell you no.
Awesome. I appreciate it, man. And I'm assuming you got no idea what you even want for this house, right?
Not really. I kind of wanted to hear your offer and see if it even made sense from there.
Yeah, no, I get it. I'm going to have my partner run some of the numbers. That's one of the processes that we go through. I mean, before we make an offer, I'll have my partner, kind of run some of the numbers and I can get back inside and give you that cash offer to the penny. But I mean, can you actually believe that there's some properties in this neighborhood that have sold for as low as $60,000?
60? Yeah, no, that, I mean,
isn't that crazy? I was looking at that earlier. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's nuts. So I just was taking
I'm guessing those properties are probably surprised. Like the ones that go into foreclosure that need a lot of, you know, that are all messed up and abandoned and boarded up.
Yeah. Yeah, they were sort of similar to this house. I mean, yours is a little bit nicer, so I mean, that's where we'll be able to get you more than that. But I was just surprised by that number. It was interesting. So, hey, I'll tell you what. I'm going to go out to my car. I'm going to call my partner, run some of these numbers, and I can get back inside with a cash offer. And I just, besides you and your sister, is there anyone else who has a say on you selling or not selling this property?
No. It would just be my sister and I at this point. So, but 60 is definitely not a number that I would want to entertain.
No. No, I don't expect you to sell it for 60. I was just seeing, as telling you, that's what some of these properties were going for. I mean, so off the record, I mean, would you mind sharing any round numbers just so I can try to get an offer that makes the most sense for you? Because if you tell me what you kind of want, I can see if we can match it. You know what I mean? I'm not sure what you really need from us. And quite frankly, maybe if you just kept this thing, it'd make more sense.
I mean, my sister told me yesterday after we spoke that she was on Zillow and she saw that, you know, that she saw the Zillowmeter, what's that thing called, the number that Zillow gives you,
Zestimate?
Zestimate.
So yep,
she said that it was somewhere like around $155,000-$160,000, and so
okay, sure, so you're looking to get about $155,000 for the house.
You know, I mean, I want as much as possible, obviously. I mean, I can't see going below, sure, you know, like 140 or so.
Yeah.
I know my sister's going to want around that 155, 160.
Sure. All right. Well, listen, I'm going to go out to the car, take a look, you know, run some of these numbers, and I'll get back in here with what we could pay for the property. And like I said earlier, if the offer doesn't work, no sweat, no big deal. So let's pretend I go out to my car, I run the numbers, talk to my partner. So now we're going to get into the negotiation part of the property. So, okay, hey, Alex, listen, I got some good news for you, man. We're able to get you this offer. I have it completely to the penny. So a couple things here just before I make the offer. Listen, it seems to me like you're really not in a rush to sell. So I'm not sure how much sense this offer is going to make. So maybe listing it is your best bet. So if we bought this property, we would be able to turn around and we would just do a renovation and try to resell it. So I'll be honest with you, at this point in the conversation, I'm a little embarrassed to make this offer. I get to the point of this and I don't know how to say this to you.
What is it?
You're not going to like the offer. Yeah. I feel really bad.
But I mean, again, it's just an offer, man. If it doesn't work, I just won't sell it. I mean, what do you think you can do?
Yeah. I mean, we would probably be, you know, in between about 90 and 100,000 on an offer.
90 and 100. Oh,
yeah, I know. I know it's not what you wanted, man. That's why I said, you know, you're not in a rush to sell this thing. Really, if you kept the house, no big deal. You have the money to travel anyway. So if you sold this house, it wouldn't even make that much of a difference.
I mean, yeah, well, my wife and I wouldn't have the money to travel. We'd probably have to sell it, but, you know, I don't.
Yeah.
90 to 100 just wouldn't make sense. Remember, I got to split this with my sister. And so, you know, walking away with 45, 50 grand probably just wouldn't move the needle for me. I mean, I'd have to talk to my sister, but, you know, I'd probably need at least 130 or so.
Yeah. 130. I mean, now that we can't buy the house, I mean, what are you going to do with this thing?
I don't know. I mean, I guess I'll go back and talk to my sister and figure out, you know, what the next step here. I mean, I gotta head out of town tonight. I came in to show this property and just kind of check it out and see what condition it's in. And so, you know, I mean, look, fortunately there's no mortgage on it, but you know, I'm just not sure. I would rather sell it. I think it's, you know, she's the one that's a little more emotionally attached to it.
Yeah, no, I get it. I mean, can I ask you a question? I mean, you're not the first person to tell me that my offer's low. I mean, to be honest, most people, they say the same exact thing when we first make an offer. But, you know, in spite of the fact that our offers aren't full market value, I mean, these sellers, they sell us their house and they're real happy they did so. You know, they're so happy sometimes they leave us testimonials on our website and talking about how much they enjoyed the process. So in spite of the why do you think they still sell the house to us, even though we're still not offering full market value?
I'm guessing these are probably people you meet with that need the money, you know, that are going through some type of hardship, you know. So fortunately for us, you know, I mean, it's been tough with the passing of my mom, but you know, we don't, you know, I mean, I'm retired right now. And so I'm okay as far as, you know, my sister still has a job, but she's doing all right. So, you know, fortunately we're not in a position where we feel like we have to give it away, you know?
Yeah, and I don't blame you. And that's what I'm saying. I mean, it doesn't seem like the fact that we could come in and buy this thing as is and close quickly is even that important to you. So that's why I don't expect to buy every house. But I'm just trying to think of any more things I can maybe do for you now that we can't really buy this and renovate it. I mean, if we were able to, the only thing I could even think of to try to get you that price or at least closer to that price is, and if this doesn't work, 100% okay to give us the no, won't hurt my feelings. I mean, if we were to take this property now and hold it as a rental property, I'm running the numbers now. We wouldn't have to put as much work into it, and it wouldn't really matter how much we could sell it for, so we could offer more money. I mean, if we could get you some more money and hold it as a rental, is that even worth exploring? Or at this point, does it just make sense to part ways and just not do anything about this property?
I mean, look, I know that 90 to 100, there's no way my sister's going to go with it. And honestly, it's just not enough money for my wife and I. So,
Yeah. You
know, what do you think would be the best that you could do on this thing? Because Yeah.
I mean, I'm going to have to go. I'm sorry for taking up some of your time. I told you it'd be about a half hour. This is going to take another like 10 minutes because we're going to have to run the property through a rental property calculation. And then, like I said, if you give me 10 minutes, I can get you my best and final offer. And hey, if it doesn't work, no big deal. If it works, you know, we can talk about maybe implementing it. So is that all right? Or is it just time to move on?
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, let's do that.
All right. So 10 minutes goes by, I come back in. Hey, listen, Alex, I can get you a little bit more money for the property because we ran it as a rental, so we wouldn't have to put as much work into it. So our final offer is $121,337.23.
Okay. I could probably make that work with my sister. So 121, so we'd get about 60 or so. Okay, you guys don't charge any type of commission, right?
Commission?
Yeah, you know how agents they charge you a bunch of money to sell their property? To sell.
I mean, we're not realtors. We're buying this. Yeah, there's no commission. So that offer is the money you're gonna get in your account once we close the property.
Okay.
So yeah, the offer I make is always the actual money you get in your account.
Okay. Okay. I think I could make that work. I mean, that's a number that makes more sense to me. I'd still have to talk to my sister about it, but I could probably make that work.
Yeah. And I get it. I mean, like I said earlier, I mean, if that offer isn't going to work, I mean, we could just call it a no right now. I mean, and if it makes more sense after you talk to your sister, you could just get back to me. But like I said in the beginning of this, if it's not going to work, I mean, it's cool to just give me a no. I promise I won't get upset. Or is talking to your sister just going to be part of that decision process?
Yeah, I mean, I'd have to talk to, you know, she's part owner of the property since we inherited. So, I mean, I'd like to, could you give me until tomorrow so I can at least talk to her? Or could you, you know, leave this with me? If you could just, just put it in writing, that way I could show it to her.
Sure. Yeah. So, I mean, like I said, completely up to you. I mean, if you think this works, we could do it at that price, but, speak to your sister and then just let me know either way within 24 hours. If I hear from you, great. If I don't hear from you within 24 hours, I'll just assume that, it wasn't a fit. And, you know, like I said, it's not gonna hurt my feelings. So yeah, that's fine, man. I know that's part of the process.
Okay, man. Well, hey, I appreciate you, you coming out here. You seem like a young guy. So, you know, I like the hustle. I wish my grandson was like that.
Thanks. I'll talk to you tomorrow.
Okay. All right. I wanted to see if I threw you for a loop there with the whole grandson thing, see if he started cracking up or something. All right, cool, man. So, all right. So let's break this thing down then. So that was about 21, 22 minutes. So there's a lot to get into here, but I, just for the sake of time, we'll keep this to like the next maybe 5 to 15 minutes. But what were some of the highlights there as far as, you know, so obviously you, I walked you through the property, you know, and then we kind of fast forwarded that process, yeah. right? Because I'm guessing like one of the things that we do is, you know, as the seller's walking us through the property, you know, we're building rapport. We're just very lighthearted with them. You know, sometimes one of the things I've kind of trained my acquisitions team is, you know, if the property's occupied, look for pictures, look for things you can connect with. If you know, if my, the acquisition manager, for example, likes sports and they see something sports related, you know, it's just another way to potentially connect with the seller. I certainly tell them not to force it. Like, you don't want to make shit up. Right. But if you see something that seems like it could be a way to establish deeper rapport, that's one of the things that I like to have them do while the seller's walking them through the property, as long as it's natural and seamless. But in this particular, yeah, in this particular exactly. Role play, you know, it was fast forwarded. So, I don't know what jumped out at you, I guess, as far as this particular role play, and if, what can you share with people, as it relates to like the psychology, the framework and the process you were taking me through.
Sure. So in terms of, so the big thing with the sales is you want to always know where your prospect is, and you kind of want to have like a picture on, if you almost look at them on like a pendulum, you always want to see where they're, it's kind of hard to talk via audio. I'd have to like kind of draw it out, but basically in its simplest terms, you are not that motivated. Because what I was doing the whole time was ever since I got to your property, I was playing the reluctant buyer. You called. So what you did was you were a little not okay that I was 22 years old and I showed up at your house. So you were questioning my age and my credibility. So what I did is I started to push away at that point, and then you started coming back towards me. I'm like, hey, you must be asking me that for a reason, because I knew that you said, hey, how old are you? I mean, that question didn't matter. The intent behind why you asked me that question mattered. And I knew in your brain, you're thinking this guy is not credible. He's 22 years old. He doesn't even have hair on his face. So how the hell is he going to buy my house? So then I said, hey, listen, if this isn't going to make sense, I could just go to my car. I promise it's fine. And you were like, no. And then you started coming back towards me. So I'm always playing like the reluctant buyer. You know what I mean?
Yeah. You were like a step behind me the whole time. That's right.
Yeah. Yeah. So I was always a step behind you is the big thing. And then a couple of the questions I started asking you, I wanted to ask you some questions to see if you actually were motivated to sell. So the problem you brought me was I inherited the property and it's vacant, but just because that's a problem doesn't mean it's a real problem that's going to cause pain. So I'm like, yeah, but you're not in a big rush to sell. And you started confirming with me that you're not in a rush to sell. So then I started staying more behind you. Hey, yeah, I mean, if that's the case, then why don't you just rent the property? Because a lot of the times when you make an offer, they're going to bring an objection up. And then you're going to have to deal with that objection. So before I made that offer you at the end, I brought every objection up that could possibly happen before I made the offer, because, you know, your leverage as a home buyer is your offer, and the seller's leverage is pain. So you want their pain and they want your offer. So if you give their offer in the beginning, that's all they need from you. So then they're going to take your offer and they're going to shop it around to other investors, especially in competitive markets. So I brought all the objections up before you could bring them up, so we could address them head on. A couple of the objections were pretty viable objections, because you were thinking about listing it. You weren't that motivated. So then I basically was like, you know, going real negative. I'm like, yeah, you're not in a rush to sell it. I don't think it makes sense. And then you kind of kept going extra negative. So then I figured I'm going to try to like set the price anchor in your head, because any offer is good or bad compared to the original offer that it was compared to. So instead of dropping a complete bomb on you and saying 60K for the house and having you smack me, I said, I used like a reference. I'm like, can you believe like that house down the street sold for 60 grand?
Yeah, I love
and
that.
And I wanted to plant the seed in your, I wanted to plant the seed in your mind that that's what properties are selling for. So then my offer is a little bit better compared to 60. So then I came into my first offer, which was like, and this is something I really started doing, and this has been working really well. My first offer was 70K, but that was if I'm going to renovate the property. So then I went for the no on purpose, and we got to the no very quickly. And it wasn't going to work at 70. That was 100% okay. But that really wasn't my real offer. My real offer was the offer that we did the deal on, and that was the 122. But if you offer 70,000 and then all of a sudden you come up to 122 without justifying that offer, the seller sometimes is going to think that you're trying to really take him for a ride. So they're like, how did this guy just come up $40,000? So what I did was I said, listen, I don't think we can buy the property. However, if we kept it as a rental property, I mean, we can maybe do something. I'm not sure. I'd have to run the numbers again. So then I came back, I went out to the car again. I came back and I said, listen, we could offer you a little bit more if it's a rental property. This fits our rental model. So then I had a logical reason to explain how I can offer you more money, so it doesn't look like I'm jumping from 70 to 120 out of nowhere.
Yep.
So my real offer was 127.5 or 121, and then you assigned value to that because it's compared to the original offer, and then that offer is going to get rid of your pain. which wasn't, you really didn't have that much pain, but either way, you took that offer. But that's how you can really anchor people to get these offers accepted more, because they always got to be compared to a lower number, if that makes sense.
That's right. Yeah. And to kind of elaborate and really drive home your point, Greg, is I want people to kind of like visualize, and this is something that John, as you know, Greg, took us through in the training. You know, I remember there was one particular slide he had up, and the question was, he had a yacht next to a cruise ship. Right. And he says, no, I'm sorry. He had a yacht next to like a little boat. And he says, hey, is the yacht big? And everybody was like, yeah, is this a big boat? And he was pointing to the yacht and everybody was like, yeah, okay. And then like, it was the next slide and it was a yacht next to a cruise ship. And he goes, okay, well, is the yacht big now? Right. And so I think that's kind of, when I think of price anchoring, it's like, I like what you did, is that you didn't offer 60,000, because that probably would have insulted him. He may have kicked you out of the house, but you said something like, you kind of went negative. Hey man, can you believe that properties in that, I saw some properties in this area selling for as low as 60,000, and boom, you just planted that number in his head, even though, you know what I mean? So like, if that number would have been, if he would have planted maybe 100 or 110, he probably would have been sticking to that 155, 160 that his sister told him about, you know? So, and then the other thing that I really want to talk about is, you know, you asked the picture perfect question. So can you kind of talk really quick about, you know, what's impact and picture perfect? So there's problem, impact, and then picture perfect. If you can just kind of quickly define what that means.
Yeah. So basically, sellers sell their properties at a discount because they're in pain. So to imagine pain in simplest terms is that pain is just a gap from where someone is to where they want to be. So basically, with a motivated seller, a lot of the time, they're in some type of negative pain where they're like in debt and they're in foreclosure, or they're in some type of a jam where it's really not cool. They're in a bad position. And then if they sell the house, they can get to a better position that's going to get them out of debt, or, you know, not have them get foreclosed. So they've created this gap in between where they are and where they want to be. And a problem question is, you're basically finding out the problem, why someone's selling the house. And then an impact question is seeing if that problem is actually a problem, if it's actually impacting them. And an impact question is going to tell you if that prospect has pain or not. And then a picture perfect question is basically, hey, Rick, I get you're looking to sell your property here, but I mean, if you sold the house, where would you even go? And then you always want the client painting a picture in their brain of what they can do after they do business with you. So, hey, if I sold my house and my situation doesn't get much better, my gap isn't going to be that big, because if I sold the house to Greg, my life's not going to get better. But if I sold my house to Greg and I have money to go on vacation now, you know, I'm going to be more motivated to take some action because I've created that gap in my brain. So basically, problem, impact, and picture perfect questions are three types of questions you can ask to a customer to see if there's going to be pain in their particular situation. And then at that point, the pain creates the gap, and then the gap can create the sale.
Yeah. One of the things that you said on one of your sales call breakdown, Greg, that I wanted to really just make sure that my acquisitions team knew about this, is that, guys, I told them, you know, like you mentioned on one of your calls, if there's no pain, there's no sale. You know, if you can't bridge that gap, it's going to be really, really challenging to get that deal and ultimately help them out, you know?
Exactly. I want to get that. I was like speaking at a real estate event last night, and I'm like, I want to get a tattoo on my arm that says no pain, no sale, and just remind myself, because it's so true. Like, if you don't create the pain, it's very tough to get somebody to take action on selling their property at a reduced price, because why would someone do that if there's no reason to do it?
Yep.
So if you can create that pain, it's always a lot easier to get that contract, because you're going to add some value to their life.
Yeah, exactly. Beautiful, man. Hey, the last part of this mock role play that I kind of wanted to highlight, and I'll be honest with you, man, I just drew a blank on what that was. As you were talking, there was something that popped up into my head. It wasn't.
Was it the?
Oh, no, was it me, I remember what it was. Like, yeah, no, I remember what it was now. I think it was the fact that you kept in your back pocket that you could potentially increase your offer based on the fact that it was going to be a rental and not a renovation.
Yeah.
And I really liked that you kept kind of like an ace in your back pocket.
Yeah. And that's something I just kind of, because a lot of, like, I, you know, when I first started, I was like a one trick wholesale show. Like, guys, if I couldn't get the property at a ridiculous price, I couldn't do anything with it. So then, you know, now we can like start to take stuff down now, and rentals and stuff where we're starting to get into a little bit. So, you know, the main reason for something like a strategy like that is I like, because I've learned this the hard way. I used to make these really low offers and then I would shoot up right away. Like I'd go from 100 to 150 out of nowhere. And then a lot of the times these sellers were like, this dude just offered me 100 grand. And then 10 seconds later, he says he can offer me 150. So like that is like ridiculous. And my real offer is 150, but my first offer was 100. So I was trying to price anchor him, but that $50,000 spread, like, it made no sense for me to jump up that high. So what I always do is I always need to have a legitimate reason on why I can give them $50,000 more for their house. Yep. So I'm like, hey, I mean, if we could hold this as a rental, we could probably give you more money. I'm not sure if it's going to work or not, but I mean, does it even make sense for me to explore that? And then I do another advance agreement before I even make that other offer. But they're justifying, they can see how I'm justifying raising my offer $50,000 because I'm renting it now. I don't have to put as much work in and I don't really care about what it's worth fixed up because it's going to be a rental. So then they don't get upset when I go up 50 grand. It doesn't look like I was trying to take advantage of them.
Yep, exactly. And I noticed that your offer was super specific. It was like $121,377. Yeah. I was actually going to throw in a joke, but yeah. I didn't want to like totally throw you off there. But yeah, it was very specific. And I think that the yeah. thought process, correct me if I'm wrong, it's so that the seller doesn't feel like you just plucked a number out of the air. Like, okay, I'll do 120. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. You just hit it on the head, Alex. I mean, it's, they're going to, like, if you just say, I'm going to give you 100K, they're just like, okay, cool. Like, but if you are like, I can give you 120, and you always want to have, I think, odd numbers at the end. Never Split the Difference. That's a really good book. He talks about that, Chris Voss. Yeah, so Chris basically Voss. You want the,
yep.
Yeah, great book for everyone. So basically if I offer someone $127,333, that looks like I made some crazy calculation up, and in their head, they're like, wow, this guy really knows his numbers. He's probably an accountant or something like that. So yeah. They really assign value to like what that is. So they can like, it has some credibility behind it. And then a lot of times I'll throw in something that doesn't matter. Like I'm like, yeah, I'll pay for your moving truck. You know, I'll give you 10 grand wire. Like I try to throw in some type of other value add with that offer to really show them that like, that's my limit. Like I can give you $133,332.23 and a moving truck. Cause it looks like I've exhausted all my resources. So then at that point, they're starting to assign more value to that offer because they have to assign value to that offer or else they're going to list their property, you know?
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense, man. Dude, last question I have for you here before we wrap this up, man. I think this has been awesome. It's been extremely sure. valuable. Hopefully people find it very valuable because sure. Every time I either go through one of these mocks or just listen to some type of sales training, whether it's you or John or I read a book or whatever, I feel like I always get a little better, a little sharper. And I really like the fact that, you know, that question you threw out, hey man, can you believe that properties in this area? Like that's one that we haven't used that I really like the way you kind of set that up. But as far as you stepping outside the house to kind of crunch some numbers, is that something that you always do? Or is it kind of on a case by case basis? Cause the reason I ask is we actually had a seller tell us, and this has only happened once. So maybe it's an anomaly. They actually didn't like that. They felt that it was kind of I forgot what the words and Leo and Elizabeth communicated this to me, but they felt it was kind of, they didn't use the word shady, but it was just kind of weird to them. Right. And so I'm curious that granted that was just one seller, but I'm curious if that's something that you always do as far as stepping outside, kind of talking to the partner, crunching the numbers, or was that just on this particular role play that you did that?
Yeah, it depends. I mean, you know, every sales call is going to be different. I mean, usually I don't do that, but I will do that if it's like, because basically what I did with you is I had to come up with a way to like get that rental property number. And then like, I had to make sense for you. Like, so like, if I just said like, I can offer you, you know, 90 and then I go up to 120 as a rental. Like, it's just kind of like, you know, they can still take that. But if I'm like, hey, listen, I make it like kind of a big deal. Like, hey, I mean, I have to call my partner to see if we can do the rental thing, but if we can, does it make sense? And then I'll just kind of, you know, I'll do a phone call. Usually I'll call my partner and see if we can actually do that. But I always like to do that sometimes on a case by case basis, because then it seems like they're like, you know, there's some suspense. They're like, oh, maybe they can get me more money. And a lot of the times when you get to the no right away, you can deal with the objections right away and see what's really holding them back. So in that situation, I would do that just because I'm trying to get a rental property. And I really, a lot of the times, Alex, I have to do that because I have to actually run the numbers as a rental because it's going to be completely different. So I want to make them, like in that beginning call, I said, you want my best offer or just an offer? If I want to give them a best offer that I can actually buy the deal at, I'm going to have to rerun those numbers and get my partner on the phone and really see what we could do. Because it's kind of a case by case basis, but sometimes I will do that and it has been effective for me before.
Got it. Well, again, man, I think with that, we'll wrap this up. I know that this is going to help a lot of people just kind of listening to how this works. And like you said, man, every sales call, every appointment is going to be different. Not all cookie cutter, but if you understand the framework, if you understand the process and the concepts, you can apply this to any situation. You know, notice how I threw you a curveball as far as objecting to your age a little bit, and you were able to handle that objection and say, well, you know, I'm just curious, why is that important to you? Or however you asked it, as long as you have the tools and you know when and how to use them, then you don't have to worry about this being a specific, you know, situation or example. Like, you can apply this to any situation, right?
Exactly. And that's the thing with the sales is, like, if you have the tools in the tool belt and you know the right sales system, I mean, if you follow the sales process from start to finish, you'll close any deal that's actually closable, because some deals are just not closable. They are retail sellers. There's nothing you can do to get them to take your low offer. Or another thing I like about the sales is that you'll take a lot of these people who are not quote unquote motivated. You take them through the sales process and then all of a sudden they're motivated, right? That's not going to be every neutral seller, but you're going to get one, two, three a month that you didn't think were deals that are deals now. And now that's another 10, 20K per deal in your pocket. So that's where sales can be really effective, you know?
Yep. Fantastic. Well, hey guys, we, at the end of episode 186, which was part one, you know, we mentioned where you guys can connect with Greg. But Greg, for the people that maybe listened to this one, they haven't heard that one, where can people reach out to you, just connect with you, find out more about what it is that you're doing, from a sales perspective, and maybe how you guys can help them?
Sure. Yeah. So with the sales stuff, you can just check out MidwestRev.com. It's John Martinez and I. We have some sales training that we do. So if you're interested in any of that stuff, you can go to MidwestRev.com. If you want to get a hold of me, probably the best way to do it is Instagram. You can go search Grego, GREGO_37. You can search me on Facebook. Just trying to think of anything else. You can, my company site, VelocityHouseBuyers.com. So those are a couple best ways to reach out to me.
Okay, beautiful. And yeah, again, guys, we'll have all this in the show notes page. And what I'm also going to include in both parts is the part one and the part two that I did with John Martinez. Very similar, you know, episode, but, you know, obviously Greg has mastered the training. He's got his own flavor. And that's what I want to encourage you guys to do, is try not to be the next John Martinez. Try not to be the next Greg Helbeck. Be you, but just understand the framework, the process, and the concepts, and then practice. Like, you're going to fumble a bunch. We still, you know, I role play with my team and we still mess up from time to time. It's going to happen. But that's how you get better, you know? So really just like Greg talked about in part one, just commit to mastery, commit to really, just getting a full grasp and understanding of this, and you guys are going to kick ass. So, Greg, man, this has been awesome. I really appreciate you taking the time here for a two-part series. So anything you want to kind of leave us with or drop, or just anything?
It was an honor being a guest. But my big takeaway, I mean, my big advice is just, I've not been in real estate for like 20 years. I'm not some, you know, crazy vet, but, you know, every time I've made the decision that I was going to make something work, it's worked. I think that's the big takeaway you guys can hopefully take out of this is, like, if you're new and you've never done a deal, make the decision that you're going to do a deal, and then you'll take that, like, appropriate action to actually get that deal. If you're new to sales and you want to get good at sales, you have to make the decision that you're going to get really good at sales. And then you're going to take that action because you already made the decision in advance that you're going to put the work in to get good at sales, because, it's not easy, but it's possible. If you put the work in every day and you study and you take action and you make a lot of mistakes, eventually it especially the sales, it becomes second nature. Like, it literally becomes second nature if you, you know, just consistently do something every day to get better. So that's my advice for anything with the sales stuff.
Fantastic, man. That's great advice. And I couldn't have said it any better myself. So, Greg, again, man, really appreciate your time. Keep rocking and rolling, man. I'd love to see your growth in this business. I know you're going to be doing big things. You're already doing big things, and there's a lot in store for you. So, guys, I just ask that you if you've taken the time to listen to this episode and you've gotten to this point, just pick one or two things that Greg has talked about and implement it. I mean, again, you can certainly learn this yourself, but if you want to kind of shortcut the learning process, then look at some of the resources that we have on the show notes page. If you guys go to flipempire.com/episode 186, and then same thing, /episode 188, you can catch both part one and part two, and everything will be in the page there. So, Appreciate you guys, and I will catch you on the next masterclass. Take care, Greg.
See ya.
That's all for this episode of the Flip Empire Show. But we have you covered with even more expertise and resources on our website. Text EMPIRE to 67076 or head over to flipempire.com to join the newsletter and gain free instant access to our video module training course called 5 Ways to Scale Your Real Estate Wholesaling Business to 6 Figures in 6 Months or Less. For more interviews, strategies, and insights for the smart real estate investor, we'll catch you next time here on the Flip Empire Show.